This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
A third kit with a chip in the badge, the outcome of the charges still being imminent despite there being no news, and Erling Haaland cosplaying as a geography teacher. This international break has hit us hard, so it's good that there's some football on the horizon before we lose the plot entirely. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon Podcast, where we'll be taking a look at Manchester City's upcoming games with Everton and Villarreal. We'll be joined by David Downey from the Blue Room a bit later on, who can tell us all about the blue half of Merseyside and about how one player in particular is settling in there, even if he's not allowed to play this weekend. And then later on, we'll also get the thoughts of Julian from Villarreal Fan TV to hear about how things are going over in La Liga this season. On top of that, we'll take your questions as well, so let's get to it. I'm David Mooney. With me this week, I've got City fan Ali Fogg.
Hello, everyone.
And making his podcast debut suspiciously on his own, from MCFC Lads and City fan rep on the overlap, it's Luke Stanley. Hi, Luke.
I'm good. How are we, mate?
Not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. Thank you for joining us. We will start with this kit that City are going to be wearing in Villarreal, because I wanted to read one quote by one of life's big thinkers, Abraham J. Simpson, Grandpa Simpson, from an episode of The Simpsons when he said, "I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it. And what's it seems weird and scary to me. It'll happen to you." And I don't know about you, but this kit, it's happened to me, mate.
Guys, I am literally a 58-year-old grandfather. If we are talking about how the world has passed us by, but you know, clear the next 55 minutes of content, because I have got a lot to say. First of all, I'm wondering, you know, can I use this kit to pay on Andy Burnham's B network? Can I dab my badge as I go on the bus and you know, dab it again when I get off? I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Generally, I try not to be the old man, like Abe Simpson, the old man yelling at clouds. I don't think it's a particularly good look for a gentleman of my age. And even, you know, when I go to the Etihad on a European night or whatever, and there's like Euro disco DJs banging before it starts and light shows and all the rest of it, you know, I might be more comfortable still in the concourse having an extra pint before it begins. But I like the fact that they're trying to create an atmosphere and giving young people like Luke something that they can enjoy and understand. But where I draw
and even
the
if
line,
it's not for me, it's for other people.
Exactly,
yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
There's somebody out there who will enjoy it. Where I do draw the line, I saw you were asking about, you know, where has the world left us behind? The one thing in football that I just cannot get my head around at all is people who use the scores on video games as some kind of way of analysing and understanding the actual sport of football. Like, every time a new video game comes out and it's like, oh, yeah, Rodri's only got a 92. He should have been a 94. It's like, what are you talking about, you maniacs? It's a video game. Video games are for killing zombies and throwing bananas behind your go-kart. And that is my limit. So, you know,
That's the limit.
One place I draw the line on the modern world. Leave me out of it.
Excellent. What I will say, Luke, is I quite like this kit. You know, I quite like the design. I can't help it. It looks nice.
Yeah, I think the kit's all right. I do agree with most of what you said there, though, mate, because honestly, the kids, I say kids, you probably think I'm a kid. I'm 22. I think about kids at like 16 and all the football they digest is just TikTok highlights. They're 10 seconds long, if that. And FIFA packs and FIFA ratings. So, yeah, when I was younger, it's probably slightly better because it was like match attacks and stuff. But, yeah, they don't really watch football. I don't think they can sit and watch a 90-minute game, but that's the way the game's going. So, yeah, it's TikTok and it's short clips on Twitter and it's ratings off video games, like you said. I'm slowly falling away from that, to be honest. I just don't like it.
Lovely stuff. Well, let's talk about something that we do know about, and we'll talk about the football. And we begin with Everton this weekend. Let's start by bringing in David Downey from the Blue Room. David, after the opening day defeat to Leeds, things seem to have stabilised a little bit. I was going to say Goodison. Then that's in the past, isn't it?
You can't call it Goodison anymore. You can't even call it Bramley Moor anymore, let alone Goodison and everything else that goes along with it. You guys know that too well, don't you, in namings of stadiums. But yeah, that defeat on the opening day or the opening night against Leeds was a little bit of a reality check, given that we've had new owners come in, given that we'd signed quite a few players across the summer, all of that sort of thing. And, you know, look, playing Leeds on the opening day, I think it's a difficult one to go to. They'd just been promoted. And Ellen Road's always rocking, isn't it, to give them any sort of credit. Lose that 1-0, didn't play well at all. And then from then, I think we've looked like a completely different side. Mm. I feel as if the players we've got in, they've been able to settle down quite quickly. I know we'll talk about the guy that can't play on on Saturday, of course, but
who we've referred to about three times already and not named.
Yeah, funny, yeah. It's funny that he has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on this weekend. But yeah, I mean, the players we brought in, seems to be a lot of intelligence around that, seems to have sorted a lot of things out behind the scenes too, and it feels really positive. Going to a new stadium, of course, there's a novelty that goes with that, of course there is. Speak to a lot of away fans, what they think of it. It's obviously the main thing in people's minds when we're playing home games. So much so that I think it took a couple of games to be able to look what's actually on the pitch, rather than looking around saying, wow, that paint's not dry yet. And, you know, where do I go for a pint? Why is it £7? You know, all that sort of thing. But
welcome to modern football, yeah.
Well, of course it is, yeah. And there's been plenty of screaming and shouting.
You've got them donuts as well that are about £7 as well.
Mate, those donuts are more popular than Everton when they won the title in 87. Honestly, those donuts, I mean, don't get me wrong, they are lovely, but it seems people are more focused on that. And now the other things that go about it, I think you guys will probably reciprocate that when you first had the Etihad come along. It just feels like a different club more than anything else, and I'm probably not going too far to say that. And with that in mind, I think Everton's the sort of shackles that were there, if you think about Sean Dyche, if you think about what, for the last 5 years fighting relegation, everything feels new, everything feels fresh, everything feels like they've actually done things in the right direction on the pitch as much as they had off it with the new stadium, which you guys will obviously get to see later this season. So incredibly positive right now. It always seems for us, we ended up going onto an international break when you find some momentum. And then you come back and lo and behold, we've got Manchester City away. So, you know, things turn quite quickly, as we all know in football.
Well, it's good to have you on, Dave, without you being in a state of absolute despair. So it's nice to get the positive side of you for once. Luke, City unbeaten since 31st of August now. Five wins, two draws. It feels like, even if kind of like we're all still suffering PTSD from what happened last season, it feels like the form is returning, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I did say at the start of the season, when it was, you know, the first three games, we'd only had that one pre-season game against Palermo. We came into the season, beat Wolves, who, with all due respect, are probably like relegation candidates. Don't know. Have they got 1 point? No points, so right at the bottom. So
yeah, they're struggling. Yeah, not, either way, they're struggling, yeah.
I think they're on 1 point. But yeah, it's not been a good start for them. We then took on Brighton and the Tottenham game before that we lost both of. Wasn't a good start going into that first international break. I think everyone was sort of hitting the panic button. But then after that, like you said, seven games, five wins, two draws. And both the draws could have very easily been wins as well on another day. So yeah, I think it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, Ali, City have looked pretty solid recently as well, and I guess this is kind of new era City, where in the past, when teams kind of threw the kitchen sink, you'd be going, "Oh God, I don't like this." Whereas now you're kind of like, "Oh, it's all right. You know, Gigi will punch it away, or Diaz will just head it away, or like it just feels like a different, more solid City."
I feel a lot more comfortable and maybe even bullish than I have for a couple of years, I think, probably. Particularly at the back, it feels like we've not only got a functioning defence, we have got options to give us a slightly different flavour of defence anytime we need it, or anytime Pep fancies making a change. And you know, all over the pitch, we have got players who are apparently in the form of their life. Yeah, in defence, I'm absolutely loving Kusunov on whether in the centre or at left back. Doku's obviously, every time he touches the ball, it seems to get better at the moment. And Haaland is in the form of his life. And Donnarumma's come in and absolutely looked at home like an absolute champion at the back. So, yeah, I don't want to tempt fate too much and get overly confident and cocky. But these are pretty good times, I think, we're in at the moment. And pretty much everyone fit again as well, which is a huge bonus after the last couple of months.
Yeah. How are things, like, hearing that, Dave, is probably not what you want to hear right now. But how are things going kind of in the current second David Moyes era? Because when I think of Everton in the first David Moyes era, I'm not going to lie, mate, I fucking hated you lot. Like, you came to the Etihad week after, like, season after season, ground out another game, and then won it 1-0 at the end. And Tim Cahill, is Tim Cahill available this weekend? Please tell me he's not.
Well, yeah, I mean, City, ironically, and probably appropriately, I used to love going to Manchester City as a best player. And yeah, it was always Tim Cahill who cropped up, and look, he did us a hell of a lot of goods for many, many years in terms of
that fucking corner flag celebration. So it's always at my end as well. I always in my corner. Why?
Do you ever find that something you hate about an opposite team is the thing you'd love to have on your team?
Yeah.
That was exactly it with Tim Cahill, because I used to think about that. If he did that against my side, sort of punching down the flags at Goodison, I'd be infuriated, yeah. So close to running on the pitch and slapping him. But, yeah, I mean, listening to you guys talk about City, I mean, it does, from what I've seen so far, feels like an evolved version of what we saw. I think last season was, I mean, it was by City standards, just about getting into the Champions League, almost a throwaway season in terms of Premier League terms and fighting for the title there. And obviously the other lot across the road ran away with it in the end. This season, it feels different. This season feels like it's a Manchester City of old that's sprinkled with a lot of different things there. I think Ali mentioned it there with the versatility you've got in various positions, particularly defensively as well. It's nice to have that feeling, presumably, that you don't have to drop any standards if a player's injured. You don't have to do anything too much because they know immediately how they're drilled to come in and put on that performance that somebody else has. Look, we could talk
about that. How do you think Moyes will approach that then? Because like his usual thing, or his previous thing of coming to City, was sit in deep, cut out the space. But if City are kind of, if that's what City want you to do these days, I don't know if that's the right solution anymore.
Well, you mentioned then, I forgot to answer your question there about David Moyes and how he is these days compared to the one back in the day. He's a completely different guy. I haven't spoken to him. It's like talking to a different person. He's not stubborn. He's much more outgoing. He's happy to have a smile, which he didn't know he had for many years. And now he's brought football to Everton that I think he was stereotyped against for many, many years. But when you think of the journey he's been on, obviously, what happened at United when he went to Sociedad, he had various occasions there where he just looked like he was at the bottom of the barrel anybody would look at employing as a new manager. But then when he went to West Ham 2.0, when he was there, went and won them a title, and then all of a sudden hired players who looked really effective. You look at Suchek, you know, you look at Kudus as well, who came in after, I know he came in after that, but you look at Bowen as well, who's apparently his best mate. That aspect of things he's brought onto Everton in quite a succinct way and quite a quiet way in the background. It's sort of been bubbling away since he came back. And I know there were many detractors when he first was given the job back. I'd say probably 80-90% of Evertonians didn't want him back as the Everton manager for that very reason I've just stated there, given how Everton played when he was there. The game's evolved since then, we all know that. But yet he seems to have adapted to that himself. And you've watched any of our games, the way in which you watch us play, it's not just route one up to a centre forward. That might be by luck rather than what he's selected, given the striker that we do have or the strikers that we do have at the moment. But Everton playing the ball on the floor, Everton are playing a way that is decent to watch. It's good to go as a fan. It's good to look forward to games that we've got. However, you look at City now, I just think you're handing a lot to Manchester City if you go there and effectively play the way we have so far. And it has to be something different. Dave, as you suggested then, we'll have to sit deep. We'll have to understand that we're not going to have much of the ball at all. And you haven't got a striker who's got pace and you haven't got a striker who's able to hold the ball up. By all intents and purposes, that is me leading to thinking that we're going to get absolutely destroyed. But I do feel as if that we have some utility players there who can cause harm if we're able to counter-attack. We've got pace, which is something that I think was heavily thrown towards Moyes of not having that in any of his sides at Everton. There were no really quick players that we had. Now, when you look at Ndai, who's scored a great goal against you guys last season, you've got him there. You've got Alcaraz, for some reason, who hasn't got too much game time, but he's been a real threat when he came on, changed it against Crystal Palace when we went and won that game before the international window. We have players who are able to change games that we've not had in the past. Mm-hmm. And that's what's pretty... It's pretty unpredictable. Everton, an unpredictable side right now, and I never thought I'd be saying that any time in my recent time. So it wouldn't shock me if Everton go there and get a result and play a completely different way that you would expect. For instance, Michael Keane's been Everton's best player so far this season. Now, you would laugh at that if you hadn't seen an Everton game. He's been miles better than any other central defender. He's been miles better than anybody being a leader on this side. So it's not very predictable, as you probably would imagine, the Everton side that you're going to be seeing against City.
Yeah. Luke, for City then, how are you expecting Guardiola to go with this? Because as Ali mentioned before, there's a lot of players returning from injury and there's a lot of players coming back after the international break. Just starting with the defence, like City have looked fairly solid recently, as we've said. But you've got John Stones back now, who, you know, had a great game for England and is, you know, is an absolute Rolls Royce of a defender to have in there if you've got that option. Not sure on Kucinov yet if he's going to be fit and ready to come back, but, you know, he's an option for right back. How would you like to see Guardiola approach this one?
Yeah, it's really difficult because after these breaks, it reminds me of just the first game of the season where you don't really know who's going to play. I've seen there Dave rattling off a few names for Everton. I take it he doesn't quite know how you're going to set up as well. So it's like, it's difficult because, like you said, these players that are coming back, like John Stones has gone and played for England, but he couldn't really play for us before the international break. So, I mean, you'd think Stones is now fit. Kucinov, he didn't go with Uzbekistan, so I'm now not sure whether he plays. Defensively, I wouldn't mind just seeing the players play that we had before the break, but then the likes of Nico O'Reilly haven't had a kick, so It is a bit of a weird one because, you know, at left back he was looking very good, but then he's not played now in 2 weeks. So would you shuffle the defence about and maybe put a, you know, Guardiola at left back, put Stones in there? It's really hard. It's really hard. I wouldn't want to just completely guess because like
you've got the option of Ait Nouri as well there, who I think is available again this
back.
Weekend.
So there's so many decisions, but I'd like to think that whatever Pep does go with is something we've seen before. I don't want him to start trying out new things, you know, 10 games into the season because we need to get some points, more points on the board.
Yeah, it's not how it works around here, though, I'm afraid. Yeah, Ali, Luke mentioned Nico O'Reilly there as well. I mean, the start of the season he's had, like he's like for a youngster playing out of position at left back, like it seems to be this left back position that gives City a lot of stability, and it always seems to be a player that's not a left back that does it.
Yeah, I know. We can go back like literally 10 years and been moving midfielders into left back. Nico O'Reilly has been wonderful this year. I'm slightly surprised by how surprised other people are because we saw so much of this last season. I mean, he was great last year when he came in and did that job, and he did it really well. And then over the summer, when all the talk was about Ait Nouri and transfers and all the rest of it, people kind of forgot about him, I think, a little bit. And to be honest, I think his performances have been good enough that it would be really tough on him to get dropped for Ait Nouri again. My hunch is Pep will probably put Nico back in. I know what Luke says about having a couple of weeks without football, but actually when you're playing a lot of football in over a long season, a couple of weeks is actually quite a good break to get the legs, you know, get the tiredness and the soreness out of little niggles and all the rest of it. So hopefully he'll come back absolutely bursting full of energy. And actually there's quite a nice thing about the game on Saturday for us is that there's quite a few key players who were given a couple of weeks off. Phil Foden's another one. I'm expecting him to explode on Saturday. You know, absolutely bags of energy, hopefully. So yeah, my hunch is probably Nico starts at left back on. I'm left right dyslexic, so when I talk about my right back, I'm probably talking about left back and vice versa. But at left back, I would expect Nico maybe to start against Everton, and then maybe Ait Nouri to come in for the European game on Tuesday. But who knows? It's Pep, as you say. That's not how things work around here. We'll see.
Yeah.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Luke, just quickly on Foden as well, because Ali mentioned him there. I mean, how important is this game for him, do you think, obviously having not been selected for the England squads? Because there's two lines of thought, really, with England, that like, you know what you're going to get with him, and like, England didn't need him for these qualifier and everything else. But at the same time, he hasn't had the rhythm that he would have had he continued his good form in playing more games.
Yeah, exactly. I think maybe that's why this model, I think, is it next year they're bringing in this like double international break thing. So as fans, that's going to be really frustrating, because instead of having 2 weeks without a game, we're going to have 3 weeks. But I think by doing that, it probably means the players that don't get picked can probably have some sort of training sessions, maybe.
Yeah.
But it also means that you're not going to have as many breaks at the start of the season, which is probably a good thing, because it's so frustrating to watch your team, you know, win a few games on the bounce, some players hit a bit of form, and then wonder, are they going to carry it on in the next game, which is in 2 weeks? It is annoying. It is really annoying. So I do hope Foden, you know, kicks on. He's had a good, I'd say he's had like a 7 or 8 out of 10 start. He's not been quite at his highest level, but he's been very good, which is obviously what we want to see. But I think he's important in this team as well. He said himself, with like KDB leaving, obviously David Silva 5 years ago now, it's his time to, he's 25, it's his time to, you know, be more creative in the middle. And I think he's been good, so hopefully he can carry that on. But as I said, 2 weeks without a game, it's frustrating, because these players, they're in form. Are they going to carry it on?
Yeah. Speaking of informed, Dave, who's playing well for you at the moment? Obviously, we can talk about Jack Grealish, but he isn't available for this weekend. So, I mean, the question, I guess, is twofold then. Who's been playing well, and what will you lose with Grealish not in the team?
Dewsbury Hall, I think, has been probably our best player since we've got him in, certainly in a midfield capacity. I know I mentioned Michael Keane, but obviously that's defensively and up front. Ironically, I think he's probably one of our best strikers that we've had for quite some time. But Dewsbury Hall's come in.
If he scores and punches the corner flag, mate, I'm gonna be so angry with him,
mate. He's getting, and you know, there's a new walkway of all the legends at Everton, the new stadium. He can have one. There's a place for him. You get rid of one of the other legends, just put him in there if he does that. But Dewsbury Hall's come in. I think it was quite a shrewd signing to make. A typical one that you get from Chelsea, who just have 1,000 players and some who've gone there and destroyed their own career. I mean, I was only thinking about this. You think of when Sean Wright Phillips went there, and you think of when the likes of Scott Parker went there, players who went there and tried to sort of compete for trophies and yet barely got played. It's been going on for years, hasn't it, Chelsea? Not more so than it is these days. And going and getting him,
I hate the rich clubs coming in and sweeping up all the talent. Against the spirit of the game. And
disgusting as well, when there used to be like so many other sides like ourselves there now. But we've had to go and get some money as well to compete. But yeah, we went and paid near 30 million for him. He came in. He was going to start. We had issues in midfield. I think we had the whole burden was on Jussi Gana-Gueye's shoulders for quite some time. Now, he looks like he's 21. He's just been immense for several years now since he came back from PSG. But we went and got a player from from Chelsea there, who is just he's the anchor in the midfield. He's able to cover so much ground across the pitch. He pops up in areas. The interesting thing about Grealish that we mentioned there was it's almost a go-to that he's the man who knocks it out to him on that left-hand side and will follow it up, rather than just leaving Grealish to his own devices over there, because I think that's what many teams, and you'll have seen this yourselves, you might well have witnessed this yourselves at City, with Grealish, it's predictable when the ball goes to him. I'm not saying it's predictable when he's on it. It's predictable that it goes to him, and you often get defences there on that side of the pitch doubling up on him, or often in our case, triple up on him because they haven't got a fullback to go past him or anything like that. Dewsbury Hall has that intelligence, I think, to generally find himself in space that's needed to maintain possession in the other half of the pitch. And he's been like a breath of fresh air. He's felt that Everton are able to put a real stamp into the opposition's side of the pitch, which is, again, a completely different thing and a breath of fresh air to us to have him in there and able to do that. And plus, he's got the legs to run all over the pitch as well. Similarly to what we wanted from James Garner when he came in, who, quite funnily enough, he's been played in every single position on the pitch. He's been a fantastic left-back and a fantastic right-back, which has done him a disservice for actually playing in the role that he wants to play in the field. So there's a few things there. And very conventional Moyes in that he's able to put versatility into the players that he's got. And I think in Dewsbury Hall, putting him in there, he's able to drop deep. He's able to play at the head of a diamond. He's somebody there who's crucial to us. He obviously ridiculous yellow cards that I'm sure you guys saw before the transfer, before the international break. So it's lucky that we've got him to come back there, because I think he's going to be crucial if we go and get a result with you guys.
Yeah. Well, City look more stable with Rodri in the team, Ali. We'll get news on him as Guardiola speaks on Friday, I guess. But in many ways, it's important not to rush him back. So given like the strength that Everton have, and I mean, an Everton win takes them above City in the table after this one. While it's important not to rush Rodri back, he is a key figure there. How do you see Guardiola approaching this one with Nico as his starts of the season as well?
I mean, I would very much want to know what the data is coming back from the men in white coats with the machines that go ping and all the technical advice that he's got on Rodri's fitness, because the last thing we want is him going down with any other minor or, heaven forbid, major injuries. It's a Pep decision and we don't know, but it's such a lovely position to have Nico G playing well, looking like he belongs there. And yeah, he's not Rodri. No one else in world football is Rodri. But with all due respect to Everton, I think Nico G could probably do the job perfectly well there. If Rodri needs another 3 days to recover, then so be it. It sounded really good news after the last game when Rodri came out and said, yeah, no, I felt something, but it's fine. If he'd gone down in the 75th minute instead of the 25th minute, I would have been absolutely convinced it was a tactical one to get him out of the international duties. And maybe there was a little bit of that too. So, you know, who knows? Maybe he's absolutely fine, fit firing, ready to go. But if he isn't, I'm absolutely fine with Nico G doing that job, and then maybe Rodri coming in against Villarreal on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think the key is as well, Luke, that City can't play Rodri for 50, 60, 70 games as they have done in the past anymore. I think Guardiola has to be kind of a lot more trusting of other players at this stage, doesn't he now?
Yeah, it feels a little bit like, in a way, what KDB was like. He had that really bad injury. I'm not saying we have to manage his games quite as much as that, but you've got, like you said, 60, 70 games in a season, he's going to probably play 40 or 50 then. Whereas, you know, when he was winning the Ballon d'Or, when we were winning the treble, he was playing every single game without fail. And that was partially due to the misfortune, or whatever you want to call it, of Calvin Phillips as well. Like, him not being available at all or getting a run of games meant that there was just no backup at all, to be honest. So yeah, it is difficult because you do have to manage his games. But now, compared to last season, we have got other players that can play there. We've got Kovacic coming back at some point as well, that can maybe fill a gap there as well. We've got Nico G. We've got options in there, and I feel like that's better now because you don't feel like you have to play Rodri in these games. Even if they are big games, you don't feel like, you know, we're going to just guaranteed lose if we don't play him type thing.
Yeah. And I mean, Ali mentioned Doku before, Luke. We just talked about Grealish having an impact on Everton. Doku's had an impact on City this season in a way that, I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't see coming.
Yeah, he felt like a new signing. I think he was, as much as I don't really like speaking about it because it did feel a bit like pre-season, the Club World Cup, he was very sharp in that.
Mm. Oh, you were there, weren't you? What was it? Yeah. What was he kind of like? Because like watching in the middle of the night from over here, I don't know if I could get the full picture of what he was like, what he was actually doing.
He just felt like kind of like electric. Weirdly enough, I just bumped into his brother on the concourse, which without trying to be rude, he just looks like a larger version of Doku. And I said, "Oh, that was a good goal, that." And he was like, "Cheers, mate." And I thought, "You didn't score it yourself, mate." But he was, I thought it was really good. He just had like something about him that I feel he didn't really have the last two seasons. I don't know if it's this baptism or he got like blessed by the some sort of like lord or something in his home country. So there's a few conspiracy theories as to why he's playing well, but he is playing very well. And he does feel like a new signing this season.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what religion anybody is on the podcast, but Ali, are we having that Doku's revitalization in form? Is the best proof that we've got that God exists?
I'm taking Savinho down the river to get him baptized. Duck him in there. Get his head down.
Straight away. Dave, we've talked about Everton's strengths. Where are you struggling this season? Where do you feel that City could get at you if they... I mean, Guardiola will have done his homework, so where are you concerned that he might go for?
I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that you did this on purpose, talking about Doku, because that's exactly the part of the pitch where we're struggling. I say struggling.
Hey, you plan these podcasts sometimes, and sometimes you get lucky by accident. And I'm not going to say which one it was.
You plan that far in advance, but you asked at the end of last season. With him, I mean, I'm a massive fan of his. I know last season he's had his critics, hasn't he? That he was sort of initially when he came to City, I was excited to see what he could do, but he reminded me quite a bit of and I've completely forgot who it is now. He's at Fulham, but he was at Wolves, big lad.
Adama Traore, yeah.
Yeah, he reminded
me
of him a lot.
He's only ever good against City for some reason.
Well, yeah. But he's a powerful lad. Obviously a much better player than he is Doku. I watched him against Wales the other night and he was electrifying. I know many people will take that with a pinch of salt that it was Wales, but again, when I see him and...
Ali, you can't pull that face. You're a Scotland fan. You're not supposed to like the other home nations.
I was just thinking there must be a Welsh listener to the Blooming podcast somewhere.
Well, I'm pretty much Welsh because we're next door to it anyway, living here.
I've never heard of Scouser say that before.
Well, mate, some of us have preferred it, believe it or not. I thought he was fantastic against Wales when he played, and I'm a massive fan of his because I think he's somebody who's willing to try something completely different. He's somebody who doesn't care for what I think Pep Guardiola's insisting him to do. And I think that's what you often get the best out of a player if you just leave him to it. I would say that you probably suggest he's an evolved version of Grealish, playing on that left-hand side, being able to cut in, and you don't know what he's going to do with the ball. He's certainly quicker than him. And to answer your question, go back to what you asked in terms of those areas. It is right back. I mean, we've had Jake O'Brien play there, and he's been fine. Reminds me a lot of Julian Lescott when we first bought him. We played him at left back, and he kept Nathan Baines off the team. He was that good. Jake O'Brien's been a revolution at right back because you think he's Seamus Coleman now, who's, you know, getting on a bit. I know we played for Ireland the other night, but I think it's sort of now and again you'll see him and say, oh, wasn't he great back in the day, but he's not going to play every week. It was much maligned that we got rid of Ashley Young and didn't replace him. There's nobody at right back there. Garner goes in there and does a decent job. But with Jake O'Brien there, he's a big lad. He's one of those players similar to John Stones, similar to Branthwaite when he eventually gets back. You don't often get big lads who are really quick. It's normally one or the other. But he's one of those players at right back who's been sensational. Having said that, the last two, you can see from a mile away that he's not a fullback. So much so that we had to bring him in. I think Tarkowski went off injured and we had to bring him in at centre-back, which he is by trade, and he was really good in that position. Mm. if we're having to do that again, then I think Garner will step in that side. On the left-hand side, Mikhailenko, which is a very, very strange left-back because he just looks like a packet of crisps. He get blown away. But he has the knack of playing really well against good sides. For instance, I think most Liverpool fans will tell you that he's had Mo Salah in his back pocket every single time we've played Liverpool, despite the fact you probably play against, with all due respect, the Burnley side or the Wolves side, he'd get ripped apart. But, you know, this might be the exact kind of game that you put him in there. But yeah, those two areas on either side of fullback, that's what petrifies me against what you guys can do against us.
What flavour crisps would you say he is if you had to pick a flavour?
Oh, ready salted, mate. No one
absolutely plain. Yeah. Although, I mean, this is an eternal question. If you can only ever eat one flavour of crisps ever, like for the rest of your life, you would surely pick ready salted because you can't get it wrong. Whereas so many other flavours, you can get wrong.
I think it's salt and vinegar.
Oh, I think that's the worst thing you could do.
I think it's salt and vinegar. But, yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're settling for knowing that that your average is good. It's the McDonald's theory. It's like McDonald's are very good at not being shit. That's all they're good at. They're not good at being good. They're good at not being shit. That's all it is.
All I'm saying is the correct answer is cheese and onion.
Cheese and onion.
I'm actually a salt and vinegar guy myself. So Luke is probably spot on. I would end up picking salt.
Dave,
vinegar,
I can't believe you're the salt and vinegar guy. I cannot believe you're just a salt and vinegar guy.
Why would I not be a salt and vinegar? What's your go-to? You're not going to tell me you're polluting the office with a prawn cocktail crisp.
No, it's like you're now going fun guy who just looks to me you wouldn't be as boring as getting a ready salted crisps.
Hey, you don't come into my house and start throwing insults like salt and vinegar crisps are boring.
The last thing you want to be doing is being that guy though, where you pick a flavour of crisp that's going to get deleted in a week, and then you're crying about it and have to pick another one. So just stick to salt and vinegar.
You can see why he works for the BBC, mate. You can see why he works for the BBC.
Ready salted is the safe bet. Salt vinegar is the one that you should go for, I think.
I think I've been doing this podcast occasionally with you for getting on 10 years now, David, at least 8 years, and that's the most impassioned and angry debate we have ever had in all those years.
I don't even know if it's going to make the edit either. We'll find that out when we get there. Dave, before we let you go, let's get a prediction for the charity bet coming up later on. What scoreline are you going for?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking relatively positive that we could go there and nick a point, but I just think, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Haaland, and he just looks like he's probably reaching the peak that he was when you first got him. And I think he's near impossible to control. I mentioned there that we probably play quite deep, but it doesn't seem to have any impact on him whatsoever what he's able to go and do. So with that in mind, I think we'll score a goal, but I think City will go and win it comfortably in the end. I've gone for 3-1 to City.
Lovely. We'll chat that out on the odds a bit later on. But for now, David Downey from the Blue Room, thank you very much for being with us today.
No problem, gents.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now, we've also got Villarreal this week. I've been speaking to Julian from the podcast and YouTube channel Villarreal Fan TV to find out about their season so far.
Generally, I think we have started good in the league. Marcelino, who's the head coach, has focused on, maintaining the league performance and not focusing solely on Champions League. So it has been so far so good, except for two matches. It was against Madrid and they're both Madrid teams, but it's very difficult matches as well. So yeah.
Yeah. In terms of kind of this one then, going into the game, obviously you have Real Betis before this one. City also have Everton as well to play before this one. What are you anticipating from this game? Because looking at the Champions League so far, it's been a bit of a tricky start for you.
Yeah, it has been very difficult for us. I don't know how much you know about Villarreal, but we lost some key players in summer, so we signed a bunch of new players and it has taken some time for them to integrate into the team, so that has affected us a little bit. And the Champions League, as you mentioned, the start hasn't been we haven't been competitive, but we haven't got the full points, so we lost against Spurs. away 1-0, and then we drew at home against Juventus. It was fair result, but I felt maybe we should have won that match, you know, to get the best out of it.
Yeah. You mentioned the new players. So how's the squad looking? Who's come in and kind of what's happening at the moment?
So, yeah. So we got a new striker in Mikhail Totse from Georgia. He came from Lyon this summer. And then we signed some defenders. Renato Vega from Portugal, and who was on loan in Juventus. And some exciting young players as well in defense and on top.
Yeah, what's the style of play been like? How's the coach approaching games?
He is a very we don't rely heavily on possession, so I think for City this is could be a good match. We give away a lot of possessions, but we counterattack. So we are very direct when we have the ball. So a few touches and we go with speed and yeah. So that's how we play. We play like compact when defending with 4-4-2, and then when we attack, we play 3-5-2. We switch. We put one of the wingers up. Usually, and my left back usually goes up. So this is gonna be. Yeah, I think we're gonna see some goals in this match.
Yeah, will you sit in deep and kind of protect the space, or is it a case? So I mean, City have seen a few times where teams have gone man to man against them that they can find that pressure a little bit tough at times. Are you more likely to go man to man, or are you more likely to sit in deep, try and cut the space out that way?
More and more the latter, the compact, stay compact and be aggressive in some when we are like in the for City in the final third when you guys are pushing up, maybe aggressive with Doku, for example. He is he's a difficult, tricky player. So with him and the wingers, I think we're gonna be a little bit aggressive and in midfield. But usually we stay compact, and then when the opposition lose the ball, we counterattack with full speed. So yeah, that's how we play usually.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that this is at Villarreal as well. I mean, your home form, apart from the Juventus game, you've won every game at home. Is that going to be key for you?
Yeah, it's going to be key at home. We haven't lost since March, I think. Oh, yeah. So it's going to be key, but against City, it's very difficult. You know, with Haaland in form, and it's very difficult to maintain him. So we hope Foyt is back by that time. I think he's the closest player to dealing with that kind of physical presence and Vega, but I feel with the way Haaland's playing right now, it's very hard to stop him. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if people are aware, you're based in Norway, aren't you? So very very familiar with Haaland.
Yep, Haaland and Oscar Bob, yeah. So I'll be following the national team and be following Haaland. So yeah, so he is on fire, as you know. So he's going to be in form.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of Villarreal's style, which players are playing well right now? If you are going to win this one and you are going to get the points from this one, which players will be the ones that do the damage?
It has to be, I think, Nicola Pepe. If it's someone who's going to make a difference for Villarreal, I think it's him and Nicola Pepe. But you have some other players as well. Perez, Ayoze Perez could be back, but I don't know how much we don't know about his match fitness so far. But I think the main player for Villarreal is right now Ayoze Perez. Nicola Pepe. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And just looking at Villarreal as a team, you mentioned kind of the new players coming in and kind of the transition that you've had to go through this season. What do you think the aims are for this season? Currently sitting in third in La Liga, 3 points behind Barcelona. What are you hoping to achieve?
The coach has expressed that he wants to maintain, you know, playing in Champions League each year. Usually, like historically, we've been playing in the Champions League, Europa League, but the season after we usually like drop out. So the main focus for Marcelino has been to maintain for two reasons. First, for keeping players. You know, it's very hard for Villarreal to keep players. So in order to stay at the top, we have to also play in Champions League to finance the players and everything with, that comes with the economy. So that's why we rely heavily on performing well in the league. And the second part, I think bringing players in order to like attract players, also you have to be like playing in the top divisions, and I mean competing in the tournaments like Champions League. So the yeah, so Barcelona has been focusing heavily on the league as yeah, so, and the Champions League is just a bonus and yeah and stuff.
Yeah, you mentioned before about a counter-attacking style. How do you see this one going then in that case? Because in previous years, I would have said City are quite susceptible to a counter-attack, but in the last few, certainly in the last few weeks, it seemed like City have been quite happy to when they're under pressure, they can just kind of head it away, they can kick it away, they can kind of dig in deep in a way that they've never really been able to before. How do you see this game going?
You're right. I've been watching the last few matches for City, and although you guys didn't get them, I think it was one of the, you were leading and then you just conceded at the end. I don't know which, it was one of the top matches, I think.
Yeah, it's probably Arsenal, that one.
Yeah, the Arsenal match, exactly. I think that one, yeah. So if we met you guys last year, like when you were at the dip that you were in, I think maybe this would have been, I would favor maybe slightly Villarreal, but with the way you guys are playing now with possession, but not heavily committing players and being balanced, I think this is going to, for Villarreal, it's going to be very difficult because we rely heavily on team attacking us so that we counterattack. But with the way the team is set up, I think we will create some chances, but I think you guys are going to be more effective than us.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, we got the charity bet coming up a bit later on in the show. I like to hand my prediction over to guests when they're on. So how do you think this game's going to go? What are you expecting in terms of how the game will go? And let's have a score prediction as well.
Sure. I think it's going to be some goals in this match. I could see maybe City winning 2-1 or 3-1. Yeah, at least winning by 2 goals, I think, and Haaland scoring. Yeah, so my prediction is 3-1 City.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Julian from Villarreal Fan TV. Just before we get to predictions from you guys as well, a couple of players that we haven't mentioned yet. As Dave said earlier on, we haven't mentioned Haaland yet, Luke. He, as a start to the season, numbers-wise, weirdly, before he went away on international duty, it was something like one of his worst starts to the season because of how good his previous ones had been. But now is the fact that he's still scoring, you know, for Norway. The fact that he's putting this run together where he's scoring week after week. Are you a bit concerned that nobody else is chipping in yet, or is it a case of, well, the big man's doing it, so leave him to it?
Yeah, I mean, no one needs to chip in. I mean, he's scored 10 games now on the bounce for club and country. I think there's three Norway games in that, and obviously 7 for City. He's got 5 games in a row in the league. I mean, I hate talking about this kind of stuff, but I mean, that Vardy record, if there's any man that could get near it, 11 games, I think it would be Haaland. I probably now jinxed it, meaning he won't score against Everton. So, yeah, but don't bet against him because, yeah, 10 games on the bounce. I think he's got 21 goals, 3 assists in 12 games this season.
That isn't normal, is it? That's not... No. That's not, weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, at the age of 5 or 6 watching football, my dad always said to me that like 1 in 2 is a very good record for a striker and 1 in 3 is, you know, not so bad. And he's getting 2 in 1 there. So yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
He's a supermarket offer, isn't he? That's what he is. Like he's a, like buy one, get one free, score one, get one free. Yeah.
Yeah, it literally is. And I remember when Haaland signed, I was looking at the numbers and people were saying, oh, that's the Bundesliga. He's not going to get a goal every game. He's got 94 in 104 in the Premier League. He's going to join the 100 club very soon, realistically, in the start of his 4th season. So I don't think anyone gets close to him. I mean, Harry Kane's putting up some unbelievable numbers, but again, you'd talk about the league maybe that he's in. Not that you can criticise it too much, but especially in this league, no one gets near that guy. No one gets near him.
Yeah. Ali, there's, I can't explain it, but in that first season of Haaland, it went away a little bit in seasons two and three. But there's a sense now when the ball breaks to him in the box or when he's running through on goal with it, I just get a little bit giddy. I just start to like get the giggles, that sort of thing. It's just weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever watched a player as a supporter, as a fan, where I feel so confident when he's going through one-on-one and the keeper that this is a goal before he gets there. You just do not expect him to ever miss. And he is an absolute freak. I mean, it's something that I dwell on a lot. That I think the fascinating thing about Haaland is there is no other footballer, to the best of my knowledge, in the history of world football that has got his exact package of qualities. His physical dominance, you know, the physique, the sheer size of him, his speed, his quality, his calmness in front of goal. I mean, you can think about, you know, the original Ronaldo maybe being the closest to that type of physique, but they're not quite the same player. He is just a phenomenon. It's like he's been created in a lab as a goal scoring machine. And it's just wonderful to watch. But also, I mean, you made a joke at the start about him looking like a geography teacher. That photo of him that came out this week, I thought it was really quite telling because it was just so endearing.
He's got such a sense of fun, hasn't he? Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly it. The way he's, I mean, and the thing I've been loving about him this season is he's been playing with such a smile on his face all the way through. He's looking like he's really enjoying his football again. And that's always been when Erling's at his best. I actually said, come back to the photo. You called him a geography teacher. My first thought is he looks like he's there for a reboot of All Creatures Great and Small. You know, he looks like a Yorkshire vet. And I was just imagining him running across a field, being followed by a bull and having to hurdle a fence and maybe carrying a baby donkey back to the barn and stuff as James Herriot in All Creatures
Great and Small. I never watched it, but the reference. So what I'm about to reference might be referencing All Creatures Great and Small, because it reminded me of Ted and Ralph from The Fast Show.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. That, and I think that probably is. Yeah, that's the look. I just think Erling wants, he wants to get this football business out the way, retire and settle down as a farmer in Trondheim. You know, that's really what he's desperate to do with his life. Love him. Absolutely love him to bits. Yeah. But you know, back on the actual serious football chat, he is just absolutely on fire at the moment, and you really can't see him missing when he's through. I'm got a slight nagging doubt that I remember about this time last year, when we were like eight games into the season and we'd got 24 points or somewhere very close. I think we're 26 and 9 games or something at a quarter of the way into the season, and Erling was absolutely on fire then too, and he got a little niggle, little injury, and then he just never quite came back the way he was for the rest of the season. So I don't want to curse it by getting too optimistic and assuming that what we're seeing now will continue forevermore. But heaven knows, if it does, then we have just, yeah, the world is our oyster in football terms. There's nothing we can't win in the type of form that Erling is in at the moment. It is sensational.
In fairness to last season, the rest of the team did fall apart around him.
So, yeah, of course. There wasn't really that down to him. Yeah. I was not really blaming him, but he just never quite looked as absolutely devastating from that point onwards as he did for the first quarter of the season last year.
Yeah. Luke, how about Ryan Cherki? Because he was back on the bench for Brentford. He's been one that I know a lot of fans have been excited to see, but we've barely seen him. So could this period between these next two international breaks, could this be the time where we get to see a lot more of him?
Yeah, well, I'm just hoping he can stay fit, because like you said, he came on against Wolves and scored instantly. And everyone was thinking, is he just going to hit the ground running? But then he didn't obviously get any games because of his injury. And that's the problem I have sometimes with these players that get injured right at the start of the season, is they can struggle to kind of pick it back up and get up to speed quickly, because you almost have like a bit of a pre-season. You start the season, then you get injured, and it slows the whole process. So I'm hoping he can get a run of games. It's going to be hard to break into the team, but if he can, and he does get a run of games, I'm hoping we can see him quite a lot, because he was so exciting. When we were obviously looking at signing him, we were watching him play, you know, his first few games ever for France, and he looks so good. So, yeah, we picked him up for cheap and hopefully he can have an impact, yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of having an impact, it's over to you two guys now, because somehow we've still no wins on the charity bet yet this season. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank support group. They'll be outside the Etihad collecting for Manchester Central Food Bank on Saturday, again, up until about 2:30 p.m. So please go and see them if you can. We've already heard from David that he's gone for a 3-1 City win in the game against Everton. That's 10-1 and £100 if he's right. Now, with both Everton and Villa, one of you has had to switch your results each time. So I can't remember who had to switch for Everton. I think it was you, Luke, that had to change. But yeah.
Have you placed these bets yet?
No, not yet. No.
If you've not placed, I might change it up, because, you know, if we've not won, we might as well go a bit bigger with some of the odds. There's no point returning like a little 20 quid. I might have to. What's the?
Well, you said 2-0, which is 6-1.
I forget that. Forget that. We'll go against Everton. We'll go 5-2. How
about 5-2? Okay,
just get some odds spiced up. Get a bit of money in. That's what you want. If that wins, you know what I mean. No one's dining out on a 6-1, are they? Do you know what I mean? We need a
But it has to come in. And the book is William Hill's got it at 80-1, so 800 quid if you're right.
There you go. 5-2. We'll have that.
It would be our biggest ever win. good luck with that. Ali, are you going a bit more sensible now?
Well, I originally went for the 3-1 that Dave picked as well, but when I was told I couldn't have that, I've gone optimistic and we've got a Gigi Donnarumma masterclass coming up, and it will be 3-0.
3-0, and if it comes in, I mean, it comes in, doesn't it? So you can only have what score you get.
Although I've got to say, can I just pass over my love to Luke's approach to answering that question, because we don't play that game often enough on this podcast.
That is true. I mean, KC, whenever he's on, always predicts 6-1 just on the off chance that it happens again, and he's never been right with it yet. So I mean, Luke, if you pull this one off first time of trying, then I mean, God bless you. Right. In that case, then, what are you going for Villarreal?
I think I'll stick for Villarreal. I think I'll go slightly more conservative, and I'll go 4-0 for Villarreal.
4-0. It's a meager 22-1, so 220 quid if you're right on that one.
Okay, not
yeah,
bad,
so if you're right with these two predictions, and no, like, not to jinx it again, but we have a habit of guests on their first appearance winning their first charity bet, so if you can pull this one off and you can win them both, you'll have raised more than a grand in two games. So 22-1 if you're right on that one. We heard Julian went for a 3-1 City win. That's 10-1 and £100. Ali, what are you having?
Oh, first of all, can I ask, can you make Luke's bets an accumulator? What odds do you get there?
God, I could, but I don't know what the odds of that are in real time, I'm afraid.
22 and 80?
22 and 80, yeah.
Being, about 2,000-1 there, not far off.
I reckon, yeah. Being the boring old granddad of the podcast today, I've gone for maybe predictable 2-0 away win to City at Villarreal.
Hey, if it comes in, it's 75 quid for the charity. That's it, isn't it? 15-2 if you're right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
We'll finish with some listener questions. Get in touch on Blue Sky at bluemoonpodcast.com there. You can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com as well. And I've been trying to use the Instagram a little bit more to get a few questions in that way. So just search for Blue Moon Podcast. We always stick a story up now, so you can always reply to it in there. Starting off with this from Nick on the emails, who is following up from last week's podcast. He says, I just listened to this week's show and the final question concerning pieces of goalkeeping. You make the very good point that it doesn't have to be a save, but then what's staring me in the face is Edison must surely come into the conversation for any one of several insane inch-perfect length-of-the-pitch assists that he's made over the years. What are his best pieces of goalkeeping? And funnily enough, with Edison, Luke, the thing that came into my mind wasn't necessarily the assists that he made, because he got four assists last season. He's done it, you know, a couple of times for Aguero in the past and stuff like that. It was things like just casually rolling it off the line when Diogo Jota's charging him down, or like that sort of thing. So, I mean, favourite Edison moments, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's that one against Huddersfield, that ping to Aguero where he chipped it. Also, the one in COVID, I remember just a load of players kind of crowding around him, hugging him. I think it was against Tottenham and Gundo scored. I think it was 3. That was a good moment. And yeah, what you were getting is the composure of a midfield player in net. That's what it is. And maybe some other attributes weren't quite as, you know, favourable, but I think it's such a good quality we had at the time to have basically just a midfielder in net. It meant every pass was inch perfect, like you said. And yeah, I like that that moment in COVID for Gundo, that big boot long to go 3-0 up.
Yeah, the Aguero one against Huddersfield, Ali, I always think of that one as it goes down as an assist, but Aguero still had a lot of work to do when he got that one. Whereas you think of the Brighton one with Haaland, where Haaland basically, I mean, he makes a mockery of Lewis Dunk, doesn't he? Really, in many senses, where he just bounces off him. But like that's a lot more. And for the Gundogan one, that's a lot more delivering it in front of them for them to run onto. So I guess those two probably just pick it for me.
Maybe I was thinking about there was a game against Arsenal 3 years ago, I think, where he just. Probably half a dozen times in the game, he just pinged it over their entire midfield and defence, and one of our forwards was running onto it and just caused absolute chaos. Now, I don't remember if any of them actually came off, but we entirely changed the way they were defending that game by the end of it, just because he had them running so scared. When you asked about this question, I thought about the Aguero one. I thought about the Cruyff turn, which I think was the Jota one that you mentioned. I remember him being a Cruyff turn on the line as he was getting closed down. But I went back to Twitter last night and I tried to find where it was, but I remember in the early years of Ederson, taking a screen grab of a match on the football, on the TV or the laptop, and posting it. And Ederson found himself chasing a ball or intercepting a ball well out of his penalty box. And then he had a slightly loose touch and it ended up galloping away from him. And he dribbled past two attacking players and ended up over on the left wing, almost at the halfway line. And behind him was our entire...
I would have said Wolves. Thank you.
Yeah. That would have been it. Yeah. He found himself with our entire defence and two or three of their attackers all behind him on the pitch, and then just casually played it forward. And I took a little screen grab of the moment, and I did that meme, record scratch freeze frame. Hey, this is me. You're probably wondering how I found myself here. and that was the one that stuck in my mind.
I think the worst bit about that is because that's the one where Guardiola is giving him the daggers with the eyes. I think the worst bit about that is he plays it to Fernandinho.
And he gives it
back.
Then
gives it him back. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah. The one thing I'd say about Ederson is that I'm glad we got to see him take, even though they were in shootouts, take two penalties. I think it was two penalties he took. He got the one against Real Madrid and then the one against United in the Community Shield. But I'm glad we saw that happened, because if he'd left City without taking a penalty, I think we'd have all been quite good. And they were both good penalties as well, so composed. I wanted to see him take one in a game, but I think for Pep, the risks of that are just, it would have just fried his brain.
Yeah, I am a little bit sad that we never got to see him score a goal the length of the pitch, because that happens kind of like it happens in the Premier League kind of once a generation, that a goalkeeper kicks it long and it gets caught by the wind. Ederson didn't need the wind for that to happen. It could have just
gone in.
And I'm a little bit sad that we never got that, but you know, we got the penalties, so fair play. John on the emails gets in touch to say, with Kevin De Bruyne's performances for Belgium and Napoli this season, did City move him on too early? Ali, what do you think?
I've given this a lot of thought, not only overnight with that question. I still think it was probably the right thing to do, and the time was right. We knew that Kevin wasn't finished, that he's still an absolutely amazing player. He's got incredible talent. We also knew that every season that went by, at Manchester City, he was finding it harder and harder and harder to keep up and deliver those standards. So it always looked like moving to a club like Napoli would be the right thing for him. And I'm not at all surprised that he's flourishing both there and in international football. But I still think Manchester City as a club needed to move on, and the time was right. And we actually did make the right decision, even though it hurts me a little bit to say so.
Yeah, I think the worst of it, Luke, as well, is that when he came back with Napoli, like we didn't really get. I mean, I suppose it's a good thing in the sense that he couldn't rip City to pieces and go, this is what you could have won, sort of thing. But at the same time, we didn't get the opportunity to have a 90 minutes with him and kind of like let him enjoy the game again against City this time around.
Yeah, it's not. It's not really a season for homecomings, is it? Especially with Grealish being, not available.
Mm.
But yeah, I think him coming off was probably for me what I wanted to see. I know a lot of City fans, weirdly enough, were saying they could see him scoring and like would have clapped him if he'd scored. I wouldn't have been in that boat. I was happy to clap him on his way on. And obviously Kyle Walker as well didn't have the best game back with Burnley. So yeah, it's not. It wasn't bad. I'm glad he got a good reception and stuff like that, but I'm kind of happy he didn't score or get a chance to score. I think it probably was the right time for him to move on. He's my favourite player ever. So to say, oh, just keep him another year would have been the easy thing to say. But with the amount of money he was on, I think he'd have been quite insulted if we'd offered him what we probably thought he was worth. So I think the time he's gone in a slightly slower league, as the main man in midfield with, you know, a lot of legs next to him and McTominay, I think he'll do well at Napoli.
It's the chance to kind of build on what he's achieved at City with the state that he's in at the moment, isn't it? Because he probably wouldn't have been fit enough to offer what City needed.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah. Ryan gets in touch on Instagram to say City are apparently wearing the new EAFC kit in their Champions League away games. While I think it's far better than the rain kit, isn't it a bit naughty to launch a fourth kit for the season before the third kit has been worn by the players? Does the team really need four different kits every season? And then Dom also got in touch on Instagram to say, what's your favourite fourth kit that City have ever had? Well, fourth kits. I think there's only been two fourth kits, hasn't there? So it's either this or the definitely maybe one from last season. So I'll expand that to third kits. But Luke, as someone who is younger than both me and Ali, kits wise, like when I see you on the overlap, when I see you kind of doing things, you often have the 99 kit on, the 97 to 99 kit on. Is it sort of thing that you collect? Are you like to go out and get a new kit each season, or is four kits too much for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I was younger, I'd try and just get as many as I could. It was just about going into school or whatever on own clothes day, flexing. Well, not flexing that you've got the kit, but representing more is probably the right word. Obviously, playing football and stuff, you like it. But then as I've got older, I mean, I haven't got a name on the back for at least a few years now. So I've sort of lost touch maybe with, I'm not really the target market for kits anymore. I do like the retro ones. I've got a few. Basically, in COVID, I found a box of my dad's old ones and they're all just way too big for me. But as I've sort of beefed out a little bit, they kind of started to fit me. So there's that 97 to 99 one, like you said, the home kit that fits just about. And then there's a couple that you might start seeing as I get a bit, as I start reaching the XL, which is probably a few years off. But yeah, I think this like third and fourth kit thing, somebody made a great point on Twitter that people complaining about, obviously, the club trying to make money out of them and stuff like that. I think there's a massive difference between the club raising like ticket prices and stuff like that and the club bringing out a new kit, because it's not optional for some people to go to the game. They're just going to go to the game, whatever the cost. So raising those costs, you're directly just killing people, really. But with a kit, it is just completely optional. You don't have to go out there and buy every single kit. Get one every couple of years, get one that you like, get, you know, an old one that you like or whatever. But yeah, for me,
will you be popping out for the rain one? Are you going to dip out?
I won't be
one?
Popping out for the rain kit. to be fair, but I quite like the home kit this season. I think the away kit's our best kit, the black one. I do think that's a really nice kit, and I think the green one's actually all right. To be fair, I don't think it's terrible. In person, it looks pretty good. To be fair, so yeah,
Ali. Favorite kind of third and fourth kits from the past. I mean, I always have to give a shout out to the black and red sash. But I think that one annoys you because the sash goes the wrong way, doesn't it?
We've had this conversation before, haven't we? Yeah, I have to say I'm not a replica kit wearer or collector, so I kind of take an impartial view on this. My main concern is how it looks on the telly. And I think it's really interesting that shirts that can look really good or bad in a photo, when you see the promotional pic that comes out and the club launches it, it then looks very different when you see a fan wearing it next to you in the stadium. And you know, something that you didn't particularly like in a photo can actually look pretty cool when you see it in real life. And then it looks different again when you see players wearing it in the pitch. So there was the kind of luminous peach. I'm not quite sure what the color was, like the really day glow third strip we had a couple of years ago, which I thought looked horrendous when I first saw the pictures. And then depending who was wearing it, if they could carry it off, it looked pretty good in person. But it was great on the pitch. I mean, I've got, I keep talking about how old I am. Sorry, it's becoming a running theme of this pod. But with my aging eyes, I'm very sensitive or affected by subtleties in the strips on the telly when I'm watching, and a really bright luminous strip actually works quite well for me. So the one thing I will say is I think all of us as fans, and particularly those of us who are parents of younger kids, we have to get a better grip on the fact that you don't have to buy any shirt that comes out. The club it's a money-making machine. It's a company. It's a business. I've got no problem with them giving people a wider choice of how many shirts they want to buy and which designs they prefer. That's great. But please, folks, you don't have to buy it. And tell your kids they don't need it. They can buy them a book instead. Sorry, I'm a grumpy old man.
we've got football shirts at home. Yeah. the final thought I had on this was the ghost green one from the final Pellegrini season. I wasn't a fan of the kit, but I was a fan of the City fans in Seville singing "We're Man City, we glow in the dark," which is it's a nice little throwback for us there. We'll finish with this one from Cal on the emails, who says, should the club allow James Trafford to go out on loan in January, as has been reported, or should we give him more opportunities than, for example, Stefan Ortega was getting under Edison? Could he play in both the Cups and the Champions League, for example? Luke, you were giving a very visible shake of your head at the suggestion of him going out on loan. Obviously, as a new keeper coming in at the start of the season, I mean, there was a lot of sympathy when City signed Donnarumma, but I'm guessing he must have known about the situation.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as Donnarumma, I didn't really see that happening at all until I saw him in the shirt. But since he's come in, I've been very happy with the performances. I think the thing is with James Trafford, the club could see his trajectory, could see him basically coming back into the Premier League. And I think they were thinking Newcastle are going to get a bargain here. We've then lost all like attachment to this player. We then don't have any way back in. Obviously, it'd been another transfer down the line. So I think got him in, had a couple of games, he was good. I think the Ortega situation is quite weird because I think he's on pretty high wages and that's why he didn't find a move away. But the club made it very clear that he is fourth choice, even behind Bettinelli, because you don't want players, you know, not that aren't welcome, but you know what I'm kind of trying to say there. Ortega, I think, will probably end up leaving. I think, personally, this is my sort of niche angle on the Ortega situation. I don't know if you remember last year, Szczesny was actually retired and he was just sat on the beach or whatever, and Barcelona had a complete crisis in net, and he ended up coming out of retirement and going to Barcelona as like an emergency goalkeeper. I think Ortega might be looking for that kind of angle, because City would probably let him leave for free given the wages he's on. And if like a massive club out there bigger than the sort of options he's getting now need a keeper, I think he'd probably be quite high on the list given he's getting... He could do a good job as a first choice keeper in the Premier League. So the fact he's fourth choice for City is crazy. Back to the Trafford situation, though, I don't want to see a player go out on loan that we've just signed. I think that kills kind of our transfers going forward. People would be looking at that as a stain on the club almost. So yeah, I think we keep him. I think Donnarumma is a keeper that does move on quite often, like every two or three years. So I think in 3 or 4 years. Time we could easily have James Trafford, age 26, as our number one. And if he puts in some amazing performances, then, you know, he could be the number one sooner. But I think Donnarumma's going to be in the Champions. You've got to have... not having the Champions League winning goalkeeper playing in the Champions League would be a bit mad, I think.
Yeah. The position is tricky, isn't it, Ali? Because like no other position on the field, it's not one you can just rotate as easily as anywhere else.
Yeah. My position on this is if James Trafford is happy or at least content or willing to stay at Manchester City and be number two to Donnarumma for a year, 2 years, 3 years, however long it might be, I would be absolutely delighted by that. I think that's, you know, we would have landed on our feet. If James Trafford is not happy with this and he wants out and he wants to play first team Premier League football in order to get himself in contention, apart from anything else, for the World Cup and you know, the England number one spot, I don't think we're in a position to say no to him. I think he was done the dirty. I don't know how much he knew, how involved he was in knowing that someone like Donnarumma might come in like 3 weeks after he signed. But the assumption is he didn't know that, and he probably wouldn't have come if he'd known that Donnarumma was coming. And on that basis, if he wanted to leave, I don't think it would be fair to stand in his way. But I really hope he doesn't want to leave.
Yeah, you also should. If a player wants to leave, you also kind of, you don't really want them around either, do you?
Yeah,
if they want out, you want to give them the chance to leave.
And Pep has always had that philosophy very strongly. Yeah, Pep feels that more strongly than we do, so I'm sure that would be a consideration.
Yeah. Right, well, that's it for this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much to my guests for this one, Ali Fogg.
Absolute pleasure, David. Thank you.
And Luke Stanley.
Nice one, mate. Good to be on.
We've got a clip of this week's Nostalgia episode coming up shortly. That was Kieran Murray inducting Scott Carson into the Cult Hero Hall of Fame. The full thing is available now for Patreon members. Head on over to members.bluemoonpodcast.com for more information. I'll be back next week after the games with Everton and Villarreal. I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
So do you remember the Atletico Madrid game? And all hell broke loose in the tunnel after?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was a video of Carson just getting involved and like wrecking boys in the tunnel. But
I'd
like
forgotten about this.
Yeah, and he was giving it the like, I'll see you outside, I'll see you outside.
I had totally forgotten about
that. Yeah, yeah. So that was another reason why he was such a cult hero, because everybody, you know, all the young Twitter City fans were like, you know, they call older players an unk now, don't they?
Yeah.
Look at unk offering this guy outside afterwards. Like,
I'd forgotten all about that. But now you mention it, yeah, I remember him. Scott will take you out in the car park.
As if any of these
Atletico Madrid players know who he is.
I know, like, that's another kind of like cherry on the top of his cult status that, you know, he only made one Champions League appearance in March 22, but in April 22 he was like trying to have a rock with Atletico Madrid players.
Amazing, man.
That stands for who he is and what he represents, like all those kind of things that we're saying about it, you know, how well he's spoken, how much of a representative team player he seemed to be. You know, if somebody's going to literally fight for you outside in the car park, yeah, keep him forever.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.